It's Wednesday, April 10th, 2024, from Peachfish Productions. It's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. Ireland's got a new prime minister, or as they call him in Ireland, the Taoiseach. The 37-year-old Simon Harris replaces Leo Varadkar, the gay multiracial former Taoiseach who was only 38 when he took office. So the new guy's a year younger. That's something, I suppose, but he's not gay. He doesn't have an Indian father. He's center-right. What is to spice up Simon? Well, he's on the socials. In fact, they call him the TikTok Taoiseach. Let's check in to assess his TikTok game. Here's a video from before he was Taoiseach. Just a member of the Dáil, it's the parliament.
The Irish people wanted political leaders to stand united, behind the Gardaí, behind our Minister for Justice, and against the thugs who set this city alight. The minister wanted to park politics. She picked up the phone and offered that to the leader of the opposition, but they refused. Minister McEntee and the government...
Okay, you probably need some Irish to English translation there. The Gardaí are the police, and thugs are thugs. Tug's not drugs, I always say. Pretty standard stuff from a center-right kind of guy. Center-right in Ireland being kind of to the left in the United States. But what's he doing? He's standing with the police. He's portraying the more left-leaning party as pro-cop killer. In fact, all of the TikTok Taoiseach's TikToks are fairly standard. I'd go as far as to say they're aggressively usual. They're the epitome of mid. He shakes hands to a backing track. He pumps his fist and gets a cheer from a crowd. This post, which was on X, not TikTok, did get some attention for his articulation of Ireland's policy toward Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel.
Prime Minister Netanyahu, let me say this to you this evening. The Irish people could not be clearer. We are repulsed by your actions. Cease fire now and let the aid flow safely.
To which Trita Parisi, who's a Iranian expert with the Quincy Institute, tweeted, wow, incoming Irish PM, he didn't say TS for Taoiseach, incoming British PM tells Netanyahu he is repulsed by his actions. Imagine if Biden had this backbone. Yeah, well, I suppose it would be different if the supplier of Israel's arms and number one backer in world affairs and 75-year ally and supporter of their establishment after World War II, if they had this stance, meaning the U.S., versus the leader of a country of 4 million people, which did not side against Hitler in World War II. Look, I love the Irish. I know all the lyrics to the Irish Rover, but they were neutral against the fairly high stakes of Nazism. I understand. They were dealing with famine at the time. But anyway, I did find Harris's most popular TikTok ever. Here it is.
If you're a parent paying for your student's rent, your child's rent, you can now claim the renter's tax credit of 750 euro this year. And you can also backdate it for previous years.
There are no special effects. There are no swipes. There are no edits. I played you the whole thing. The mix was off. He announced, because you probably couldn't hear it, it was drowned out by music, he announced that eligible Irish people would be getting tax credits, £750 in tax credits. It was extremely well received. The TikTok Taoiseach's diktat went over well. If only Charlie Milio could offer her followers several hundred dollars. Well, if she did and she got the 600,000 views that Harris got, I think that would be disastrously low for Charlie Milio, a real TikTok superstar. But for the Taoiseach, it is a record, an overly loud in the background record. And imagine if Joe Biden had the backbone to just give the citizens of Ireland £750. It makes you think. On the show today, we have a two-part interview, each part interconnecting to form an intricate solution to a vexing problem. What is Florida going to do about abortion? And will Donald Trump complicate matters? He often does. There is no better reporter of Florida, all things Florida, than Mark Caputo. Unfortunately, Caputo declined, so we got Maurice Schlepply from the Tallahassee Democrat. A fine route. No, we got Caputo. Here is the bulwarks, Mark Caputo, talking about abortion and Florida and Donald Trump up next. Journalist Mark Caputo's special power is lifting up the rocks to figure out what's going on. A lot of rocks there in his home state of Florida. Another thing about Mark, who's the senior political correspondent for The Bulwark, is his Twitter / X profile picture is a picture of Doubting Thomas sticking his finger into Jesus's wound, the famous Caravaggio, the incredulity of St. Thomas. Get it? Mark Caputo's a Doubting Thomas. There's much to doubt in national politics. Mark, welcome to The Gist.
Show me the wound, I always say. Show me the wound.
Probe that wound.
Show me the tearing Christ.
I love a good Caravaggio as a profile pic, you know?
Yeah.
It's so detailed, it doesn't always show up on a cell phone, let's say.
Yeah, but, you know, let him with eyes, let him see, right?
The state of abortion in Florida right now, how many weeks is it?
We're at 15 weeks, and very soon we're going to be at 6 weeks. It's a really complicated path to get here. In 2022, in advance of and belief that the U.S. Supreme Court would strike down Roe v. Wade in its Dobbs decision, the Republican-led legislature and the Republican governor, Ron DeSantis, with one eye on re-election and a bigger eye on running for president as a Republican in a crowded primary against Donald Trump, decided to pass a 15-week abortion ban. Because DeSantis didn't want to run for re-election, he didn't want to go too hard in the paint on abortion. And Florida has a privacy amendment in its state constitution that the Florida Supreme Court for decades had interpreted as applying to abortion. And therefore, all prior abortion laws that had been passed in the state, or restrictions, were almost all, there might be one or two, were struck down because the state constitution said a woman has a right, you know, that you have a right to privacy and that that right to privacy applies to abortion. So just as a test balloon, the Florida legislature in 2022, DeSantis signs into law this 15-week abortion ban. It is instantly challenged in court by abortion rights advocates because Florida has the state constitutional issue. Anyway, Roe v. Wade gets struck down soon after by Dobbs. Fast forward a number of months to the 2023, I'm making sure I get the years right, legislative session, where DeSantis is now firmly running for president in his mind. And he needs to outflank Donald Trump on the right in his mind. And DeSantis' chief of staff and close advisor, James Uthmeyer, is one of those sort of Opus Dei Catholics. If any abortion they can ban, they're going to ban it.
Where's DeSantis on that continuum, by the way, personally?
Well, I think DeSantis became more, you know, in air quotes, pro-life, and he became more of a Christian conservative. Now, the degree to which that is a political conversion or a real conversion, and my former colleague Matt Dixon had a great piece in NBC about how DeSantis at his first swearing in didn't have a family Bible. And they needed to order one on Amazon. So you can pretend you're really religious.
Sadly, this was before Trump came out with the definitive version replacing the King James. But please.
That's true. That's annotated. Yeah, I mean, my favorite Bible, actually, I bought at Barnes & Noble years ago because it was beautifully illustrated. But it was also printed in China. And I love the subversion of the fact that people who force abortions and repressed Christians are printing Bibles for us to buy for $20.
Yeah, it was possibly made with slave labor.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there's another aspect.
People then had to like give their organs up to the CCP elite. But anyway, I digress. So they decide to pass in 2023 a 6-week abortion ban in the state. But since the 15-week ban or limitation, if you will, is in effect but challenged, and is therefore stayed, the 6-week law says it's not going to go into effect until 30 days after the 15-week limitation is declared constitutional by the Florida Supreme Court.
Right.
So fast forward, when was it? The Monday before last. The Florida Supreme Court did two major things on abortion. Thing number one, it said, hey, that privacy amendment that prior Supreme Courts said applied to abortion, it doesn't. And I don't think they're being doctrinaire, because the reality is, if you look at the record, that that privacy amendment in the state constitution, none of the news clips at the time, none of the discussion at the time, none of the advertising at the time showed that people were talking about abortion. It was about tech,
right,
and data privacy.
Yeah, yeah. From what I understand, it was a very close parallel on a state level to Griswold being the privacy right found by the U.S. Supreme Court and the relationship that had to Roe.
Right. And so so they struck that down, thereby legalizing the 15-week limit and setting the state on the path to the six-week ban. At the same time, they also legalized the Florida Supreme Court, or better said, paved the way, allowed to be on the ballot, a proposed constitutional amendment from the pro-choice, the abortion rights advocates, that would essentially enshrine Roe in the state's constitution, explicitly allow for abortion. And so Florida voters in November are going to basically be presented with a choice. Do you want the six-week ban, which is essentially a total ban, because six
and that
weeks,
is the status quo right now.
Yeah, that
will
be
when the vote comes.
Do you want a ban, or do you want Roe? That's essentially going to be the argument that's going to surface.
The Supreme Court, in allowing this referendum, is that how referenda get on ballots, by Supreme Court diktat?
Yeah, well, ultimately, the Florida Supreme Court, under the law, on the April of the year that the measure is to appear on the ballot, must render a ruling as to whether it meets muster or not. However, the path to getting an amendment on the ballot is very complicated. And it's been made more complicated because the Florida legislature, like lots of legislatures, hate plebiscites. They don't want direct democracy. They don't want the rabble making all of these decisions.
Right. And so why outsource the power that they have?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And we've had a history of approving left-leaning amendments to the Constitution. So the Florida legislature has done everything in its power to make it really difficult to get something on the ballot.
Right. Florida as a state, you know better than anyone else, is this weird mix in many ways. But politically, they elect, especially lately, right-leaning politicians or very hard-right politicians. But also they're in favor of left-leaning policies. Not just this, but we on the show covered extensively their vote, which passed pretty handily to allow ex-felons to allow them to vote. And
right.
That wasn't even that controversial. An odd state. So let's establish where Florida might be in this upcoming referendum. First of all, the politics of Florida are a lot more Republican than if the last time we checked in 2000 and there was a 500 vote difference between Bush and Gore.
Yeah, 537 to be exact.
Well, depending on, that's the AP's count.
Yeah, 37 days.
Your Orlando Sentinel had different figures, but go ahead.
That's the official count, I should say. The statistic I like to use is in 2008, with the ascendance of Barack Obama and his coalition and the exhaustion of George Bush's administration and a variety of other factors that came to play in Florida, including ACORN. Remember ACORN, the Association for the Community Organizations for Reform Now? They had done a minimum wage ballot amendment in 2004. And had begun real massive voter registration drives, because they found that in the state of Florida, you have all of these likely Democratic voters who are just not registered. They're just sort of lying around. And ACORN really did a big job of that. And so by the time you get to 2008, ACORN and the Obama campaign combine on voter registration drives to give Florida Democrats an advantage of 657,000 registered voters over Republicans. 657. What does that look like today? Republicans have an advantage of 850,000 or 855. It's just this massive change. And there's a whole bunch of reasons for it. So yeah, we used to be a purple state, and we're among the reddest shades of purple you could get. No longer a swing state. We are a battleground state.
But when it comes, and you could tell me about your gut, your reporting, polling, when it comes to the abortion vote, I mean, we've seen Kansas vote to legalize abortion. So how's that vote going to go?
What was the Kansas vote? Do we know percentage-wise what it was?
The Kansas vote was 59-41.
59. Guess what a constitutional amendment has to pass by in Florida? 60%. You see, in 2004, after the minimum wage amendment passed in Florida, the Florida Chamber of Commerce and the legislature, they're like, fuck this. Like, we no longer want simple amendments to, we no longer want amendments to pass by simple majority vote. So they put on the 2006 ballot, a midterm election where Republicans tend to turn out more and Democratic performance tends to go down, a measure that asked voters, hey, should constitutional amendments in Florida be decided by 60%? That only passed by a simple majority, but it's now the law in the Florida Constitution that any constitutional amendment has to pass by 60%. So, long roundabout way to answer your question, can Florida's amendment pass in Florida with a 60% threshold? Yes. Will it? I don't know. Currently, the best available polling for both Republicans and Democrats who I know and trust have this thing polling at 70 to 73%. Looks good. But our experience has shown, and I specifically refer to the 2014 medical marijuana amendment in Florida, which failed at 57%. That's right. It got 57%, but it failed. It was polling at 70, 75%. But in the face of organized partisan opposition, the opponents were able to drive down Republican support so far that they couldn't hit the supermajority threshold of 60%. That is, there was a supermajority of Democrats that voted for it, a supermajority of independents that voted for medical marijuana, but a slight majority of Republicans voted against it, and that was enough to kill it and have it fail at 57%. Now the state's a lot more Republican, and the Republican Party of Florida is taking aim at this. They're going to make it a partisan issue. Ron DeSantis is taking aim at this, and they're going to make it a partisan issue. So it's going to be a challenge for the sponsors to be able to kind of fight that tide and kind of rise above the partisan political headwinds that are starting to blow around it.
When was the failed marijuana vote?
2014. It then subsequently passed in 2016 when the amendment was cleaned up a little and you had a general election, or better said, you had a presidential election turnout as opposed to a midterm 2014 election turnout. And the organized opposition was less well-funded than it had been before relative to the proponents of it.
But I would also say at that time, the medical or even recreational marijuana referenda nationally were doing really, really poorly. And then there was an inflection. And Florida pretty much jibes with the national trend on marijuana voting. So if we look at the national trend on abortion voting and the polls, I'm not the expert you are, but it does seem more likely than not that this thing will pass.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying, I don't know. I just don't know, right? I mean, it's at 70% now. I mean, the kind of unofficial rule of thumb, and I imagine there's a political science professor out there who could do study and call bullshit on me for saying it, is that in the face of organized opposition, you lose about 10 points. So if you're polling at 70%, you lose 10, you hit 60%, you win. If you're polling at 70% and you lose 10.5%, you lose.
So tell me about the effect that the rallying effect that an abortion referendum, especially one that's popular or to vote to legalize abortion, will get people out to the polls to vote for it, maybe people who wouldn't otherwise have voted for it. It doesn't take a seasoned political operative to worry that this could hurt Republicans insofar as people who are pro-abortion are most likely to be Democrats. If this gets them out to the polls, more potential votes for Democrats.
Yeah.
How worried are Florida Republicans, even though they have this huge vote advantage, about that effect?
Yeah, they're not really worried. it's become a pretty red state for the reasons I just had said before. DeSantis won the state by 20 points. Now, part of that was just a total collapse of Democratic performance and Democratic turnout. And yeah, I do think that there is going to be higher turnout in the state relative to what it would have been. And that could probably marginally help Joe Biden, but marginally. I mean, the Republican pollster that I have come to rely on the most when it comes to his studies, because he's been way ahead of the curve and right when others haven't, is Ryan Tyson, who worked for DeSantis. And his model, I remember his models in July of 2022. He told me, he's like, Mark, he's like, I think we can win this. Again, this is Ryan Tyson talking about DeSantis. He says, I think we could win this by 20 points. And I was like, fuck you. There's no way you're going to win Florida by 20 points. Like, the last time you had a double-digit win was in 2002 by Jeb Bush, when he crushed Bill McBride in Bush's reelection and won by 12 and a half points. I was like, there's just no way you're going to hit 20. They got like 19.5%, 19.4. He also had he also forecast for me all this other overperformance. His models right now indicate an R plus 10 electorate. That is that Trump could win by 10 points.
Yeah, in 2020, he won by 3 points, though.
Yeah, he did.
He had 5.6 million to 5.3 million, something like that. So 300,000 people, or actually maybe changing the minds of 100,000 and getting another 200-something thousand to the poll, or is it wrong to look at the 2020 vote as the baseline?
Well, no, I think it's good. I think it's good to use that as a benchmark, but also realize is that the Republican registration has been going up and the Democratic registration has been going down. Now, that's not always, there's not a one-to-one correlation. Just because you have more voters, you win, but it's indicative of the state's kind of general political drift.
And we'll be back in a moment with more from Mark Caputo. We're joined again by the Bulwark's national political correspondent, Mark Caputo. So what is Donald Trump himself doing? I know what he's doing nationally about abortion, which is doing whatever he can to distance himself from an actual view on it on a national level. What are they doing about this abortion referendum in Florida, his home state?
Well, same thing. It's don't ask, don't tell, right? It is the ultimate don't ask, don't tell for Trump. I was the first one to write in the Bulwark. The day that the amendment ruling came out from the Florida Supreme Court to put the measure on the ballot, I wrote the story that, you know, Trump up until that point had been sort of ducking the issue by not him really talking about it and saying what he stood for, but him saying, oh, it's a state's rights issue. And my point in the story I wrote is, okay, fine, it's a state's rights issue in your view, President Trump, or former President Trump, but you're a member of the electorate of the state of Florida, and you're going to vote on this abortion amendment. How are you going to vote? There's just been no response from the Trump campaign, just like radio silence. And then, you know, in part because that question was raised, and then just the broader issue of the Florida amendment coming out, I think off the top of his head at a Michigan rally, that's when President Trump or Donald Trump had said, oh yeah, I'll make a statement about it next week, which was this week. And the sort of the rest is history. But he said the same thing. It's a state's rights issue, et cetera. But he's not saying how he would vote on the Florida Amendment. What's interesting about the Florida Amendment is, and Donald Trump, and this is a dangerous thing of kind of parsing Donald Trump, because let's face it, he's not always accurate, charitably speaking. He's not always consistent, charitably speaking, is that in May of 2023, when I'd interviewed him from my now defunct media enterprise, The Messenger, I tried to pin him down on abortion. Because he was going to be running, or he was running in a Republican primary at that point. And the question is what does Donald Trump believe on abortion? And Florida had passed a 6-week abortion ban. And Donald Trump knew that Ron DeSantis was just about to file to run against him. And Ron DeSantis had passed the 6-week abortion ban. So in Trump's hierarchy of hates, where the things he hates the most get a lot of his attention and sort of affect the way in which he decides things, I asked him, well, what do you think about the 6-week abortion ban? He initially didn't really answer the question, kind of dodged and weaved. And then he said, well, I think it's too harsh. So Donald Trump, we know, has said at least that the 6-week abortion ban is too harsh. What else do we know about Donald Trump? He's floated the idea of a 16-week abortion ban. And in 2018, he called for a 20-week abortion limit. The Florida amendment has a viability standard without mentioning weeks. That could be 22 weeks. So Trump is against 6 weeks. He's spoken favorably about 20 weeks. And there is a 22-week de facto amendment on the ballot. Where does Donald Trump fall? I think he might ideologically fall closer to filling in the yes circle, but I'm not sure he thinks about things in that way.
So in terms of the national ban, I know he punted it on the state level, but if there is legislation that's introduced at, say, 15 or 16 weeks, a number that he likes because it is a nice round number, I don't know, 15 is divisible by 5 and 3. I think he might like that. Is he just going to be able to avoid commenting on it and skate by?
Well, put it this way. Is he going to avoid commenting on it? I think he's going to say, yeah, it should be up to the states. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, did you see all these terrible illegal immigrants coming into the country? Right? That's going to be, like, his response to abortion is going to be immigration inflation. That's what he wants to talk about. Now, the question is, let's say if Donald Trump gets elected and somehow Congress is able to pass an abortion limitation, the first ever federal limitation to pass through Congress, will he sign a 15 or 16 week abortion ban? My guess, totally a guess, would be yeah. Mm-hmm. Even though he says it's up to the states now. That's just my guess.
Will he be able to duck, weave, get away with? I mean, it seems crazy to say, will Donald Trump be able to get away with? And then you don't even have to fill in the rest of it. The answer is almost always yes. But there are some things, there are some issues where he has contradictory or what should be alarming stated premises that he's not asked that much about. There's not a lot of pressure on him to square reality with his statements. Like tariffs, if you look at tariffs, I think it's one of those examples where he gets to say whatever he wants and, you know, it doesn't take a lot of flack for it. There are mechanisms by which he would have to answer questions on some issues more than others. And I would think abortion would be on the top of the list. I mean, the reason why America is in this situation with this unpopular law, as noted by every referendum that they've had in a state and national polling, is because he appointed the justices that changed the law of the land. Now, I know it changed while Biden was president, and maybe some percentage of people can't connect the dots that he was the one who appointed them. But that is my question. You know, some things don't catch up and, you know, cause Donald Trump to feel the wrath of justice, but they do dog him more than other things. Is abortion going to be one of those issues?
I just don't think so, just simply because of what you'd said before, the fallacy of like, I mean, he's been indicted 4 times. On Monday, he's going to start his first criminal trial. That used to be considered just a killer. In fact, it kind of helped his campaign, at least in the primary.
Okay. So, sorry to interrupt, but here's the counter argument. Look at his handling of COVID. That was salient. That mattered to people in a way.
It was terrible. Right. It was insane.
It was terrible. Yeah. People viewed it as terrible. They punished him. Sure. So the idea that, oh, nothing ever touches Trump. There are some things that touch Trump. And it doesn't surprise me that at least a few of these.
Yeah, sure.
So why not abortion? Why can't abortion? We know because in polling that people really, really care about it. And often people who aren't even that interested in politics or people who are more Republican will on this issue defect to a more Democratic position. But go ahead.
Well, I think the pandemic is just totally and entirely different from abortion. And while abortion is important because it's a rights issue, just generally, you know, appealing to libertarians and, you know, people with more classical liberal views, it nevertheless, when it comes down to it, the pandemic affected all of us. Abortion essentially, when it comes down to it, is more limited in its proximate effects to women of childbearing age. And so it doesn't have as much salience, say, as a pandemic. I'm not saying it's not going to hurt him. I'm not saying it's not going to help him. But so far, what you are seeing out of Trump in him ducking and dodging this question that people like me and people like you have been asking him in his campaign is that he's getting lambasted from the left over the Roe v. Wade issue, understandably so, but also by the far right or the Christian right, Mike Pence, his former vice president, is saying he's abandoned, yeah. You know, the pro-life. So, the can Donald Trump exist in this suspended state of animation where he ducks and dodges and doesn't say anything about it? Yeah, I think he can. Will this hurt him? The polling shows it. Like, if this election is about two issues, Donald Trump's character, perceptions of his honesty, and abortion, he's going to lose. Now, the polling shows also that if this election is about Joe Biden's job performance, inflation and immigration, Donald Trump's probably going to win.
Yeah. And so acknowledging that Mike Pence and both of his supporters might defect, Trump has been pretty great in terms of having this stance that the pro-life side objects to, but also neutralizing that fact in terms of his actual political fortunes.
Yeah, Donald Trump creates his own weather patterns. You saw, speaking of last year in the primary, when he didn't say it, his spokesman did, Stephen Chung, had said for a piece that ran after my story about the six-week abortion ban and his view that it was too harsh, is that's when the Trump campaign sort of officially floated or clearly floated the statement that Donald Trump believes it's a state's rights issue and should be left up to the states. And the Susan B. Anthony Foundation, the anti-abortion group, they came out and blasted Donald Trump for that. And what did he do? He invited the head of SBA down to Mar-a-Lago and he charmed her. And she's been quiet since. He just repeated that same position himself on video this week. And the criticisms from her have been relatively muted. Yeah.
So my opinion is that you're probably right. Things don't catch up to him. But I do think
I think it can. It just doesn't. The question is, will it be a determining factor? I don't know, because if you look at the polling, abortion is not the top issue in people's minds.
So I do think that's true. We both acknowledge it. I think maybe we have slightly different odds on the likelihood of that happening. But are Democrats, I don't think they're banking on it, but are they making any mistakes or properly assessing the chances of abortion in Florida, abortion overall being the big issue for them? Because to, you know, lay the foundation of what I think is, there's a chance that it could really work. So they have to go hard and, you know, hope that it does work
right,
and make their best case. But do you think that they're, you know, in some ways putting too many eggs in that basket?
Well, what else are they going to run on? Are they going to run on the economy?
They could. I mean, they should. They should convince people that it's a lot better than they think it is.
Biden tried that with Bidenomics.
Well, he's a bad.
And it just
didn't
work.
He's a bad messenger for that.
Well, he's the top of the
ticket. I know.
And that's just where they are. So, you know, the Wall Street Journal poll of the battleground states showed that Donald Trump was winning on an average of like 30 points on the economy. He was winning on an average of like, you know, almost the same margin when it came to inflation, which they broke out. About the same margin, maybe it was about 20 points plus on immigration. Like, these issues outweigh abortion. Only when you get down to abortion does Joe Biden win. So it would be political malpractice of Democrats not to do what they're doing now. Like, this is their strong suit. Like, use it. And that's what they're doing. Whether it's going to work, whether they think this is more of a magic bullet than it really is, I don't know. I mean, one of the things is a lot of punditry and pre-election polling, including in the midterms, has suggested that abortion would be less of a galvanizing, important issue and silver bullet to a degree for Democrats than it is. And then when people actually go to the polls, Democrats come out quite well. So how they're handling this, it's hard for me to really criticize it because I don't think they got a lot of options. Now, when I look in Florida, getting back to what I was saying earlier about the pitfalls of making this a partisan amendment, there are some in the pro-choice community, the abortion rights community, who are saying, gosh, we really don't want Joe Biden involved in this too much because we don't want this seen as a purely partisan amendment because it'll turn off Republicans and then we won't be able to hit the 60% threshold. That exists on the state level. But overall, in the state of Florida level, overall, no. Carrie Lake in Arizona has got a problem.
Yeah.
You know, 2022, when she ran for governor, she was, you know, thumbs up for this, you know, ancient law before women even had suffrage that just bans abortion outright. And she said that she favored it.
It's on tape.
And now, yeah. Right. And now the Arizona Supreme Court just allowed that law to be resurrected. And now Lake is kind of suggesting that, oh, well, I don't really support that thing that I supported, you know, 2 years ago. That's a problem. How the politics in that state play out when you have a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature, that's going to be that's going to be something to watch. There's also probably going to be an amendment that's going to go on their ballot as well. Tricky terrain. And Arizona now is a lot more important than Florida.
Yeah, because it's a lot more in play. And the shade of purple is a lot more balanced between blue and red than your
state. I was a reporter in Arizona in the late 90s. And the idea that Arizona has become more liberal and more blue than Florida is just mind-boggling still to me. It's amazing.
Mark Caputo is national political reporter for The Bulwark, and he's a giant enthusiast of Caravaggio, who, fun fact, if we went by the normal naming conventions of the time, might be known as Michelangelo, because that was his first name, but that name was taken. I don't know if you knew that, Mark. You probably do. You know a lot.
I didn't know. It's like he lost the branding war.
That's right. I mean, his paintings are nice, but, you know, they're not exactly Michelangelo. They're,
no Michelangelo.
Yeah, they're no Sistine Chapel. All right. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
That's it for today's show. The Gist is produced by Corey Wara. The senior producer is Joel Patterson. Michelle Pesca is CLO of Peachfish Productions. The Gist is presented in collaboration with Libsyn's AdvertiseCast. For advertising inquiries, go to advertisecast.com/thegist. Umpru, gpru, dupru, and thanks for listening.